Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, by the way, with the 12-12-12 concert that was just mentioned tomorrow for Sandy Relief. We'll be talking about it on tomorrow's show, 12-12-12, with respect to the unbelievable ticket reselling values that are out there. Just look online if you want to see some eye-popping numbers and what it says about that market in general. So that's on tomorrow's show. Right now, after Medicare was such a political battleground in the election campaign, it now looks like some changes might be coming to it from the fiscal cliff negotiations, at least the eligibility age. Let's get a take on that from Ovik Roy, who tends to the conservative side of health policy issues in his Forbes magazine blog, The Apothecary. Thanks for doing this, Ovik. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you. I've read that the Medicare eligibility age might go up very gradually from 65 to 67. Is that what they're discussing?
That appears to be what they're discussing. I mean, I have no inside information, but I read the same papers that you do, and that's what appears to be on the table.
Very gradually, like over a decade or something, to slide it up those 2 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, in my ideal world, we would raise the retirement age less gradually and not just to 67, but you know, if we, for example, raise the retirement age of Medicare by 3 months per year forever, say, then we would start to really align forever, and then we would align gradually the increase in life expectancy to the eligibility age for Medicare, and we would gradually migrate younger retirees into the subsidized insurance exchanges that are set up by the Affordable Care Act, which is ideally where our healthcare spending really should migrate towards.
It's an interesting place to look for savings, assuming that Obamacare will now be implemented. I used to say that, in my opinion, the first priority for health reform should be a Medicare expansion down to 55 years old, because it was those older working age adults who were most vulnerable, losing their full-time jobs in the new economy and unable to find affordable private insurance because of their age. But in theory, Obamacare takes care of them with the new exchanges and the subsidies if necessary to buy their insurance in the marketplace. So maybe that can cover people up to 67. Is that the idea? Is that why Democrats are even considering this now?
I think that's exactly right. So about half of seniors, about 54% of seniors are above 400% of the poverty level in terms of their income. Of course, that income doesn't measure wealth, right? You can have a big house, but if you don't have income, you're still a lot wealthier than someone who doesn't own a house. But in terms of income alone, which is the eligibility test for the exchanges, about half of seniors would qualify for insurance under the exchanges and half would not be. And the thing is, at the end of the day, you know, if we're talking about raising taxes on the wealthy, why do we spend taxpayer money to subsidize health care for the wealthy? That doesn't make a lot of sense. We should really take those dollars and rededicate them to supporting health care for the poor instead of cutting the Medicare program in ways that affect all retirees badly.
And they're not talking about that in the fiscal cliff negotiations. That means testing, right?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think retirement age is the key point. But again, because just as you pointed out, if you raise the retirement age and all of a sudden then the 65-year-olds and the 66-year-olds are not all of a sudden, but gradually, if gradually those people are on the exchanges will cover the people who are lower to middle-high income, and then all the rest, the upper half of the income ladder, will not be subsidized. So it's effectively, raising the retirement age is actually effectively a way of means testing our health care spending.
People are starting to call in on this. We can take a few phone calls as we talk about Medicare and the eligibility age with a place now in the fiscal cliff negotiations. 212-433-WNYC for Ovik Roy from Forbes. 212-433-9692 or post WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Liberals are questioning the wisdom of this as a place to look for savings. Nancy Pelosi, for example, dismissed it as a trophy that Republicans want. And her point is that it won't save the government much money because many of those seniors will still need those health exchange subsidies or the expanded Medicaid that Obamacare includes. Do you have a different take on the numbers?
Well, the Congressional Budget Office, which, as you know, is the nonpartisan agency in Congress that tries to look at these things, calculated that taking that into account, the exchanges, people who go into the exchanges, that if you gradually raise the retirement age from 65 to 67, over the next 10 years, you'd save $148 billion. So that's real money in terms of the numbers that people are bandying about in the budget negotiations this week.
And Ezra Klein in the Washington Post argues that this really will hurt some middle-class seniors. If they make too much for subsidies or for Medicaid, or live in a red state that decides to reject the Medicaid expansion and are too sick to get a good deal from insurance companies, that's a real population that would be left with big bills to pay that today's 66-year-olds don't have to worry about. And another article says minorities would be disproportionately affected. Are you concerned about any of that?
Yeah, so I actually think Ezra is completely wrong on all that, and I'll explain why. So first of all, when you raise the retirement age of Medicare, remember, again, everyone under 400% of the federal poverty level, which is about $60,000 to $70,000 for a family of two, a household of two, would get coverage under the exchanges. So what you can do, I think one concern that you would have is you wouldn't want to add people to the Medicaid rolls. So I think what you do is if you raise the retirement age or the eligibility age for Medicare, make sure that all those people are covered under the exchanges. None of them would be added to the Medicaid rolls because Medicaid is a pretty low-quality program, which I think would not be beneficial to those seniors to be put on Medicaid. So take that into account. If you do that, minorities, lower-income people with lower life expectancy, they'd all be protected because they'd get reasonable insurance under the exchanges. As to whether states implement the exchanges or not, remember that the federal government can set up an exchange that will apply to those residents of states where the state governments don't set up exchanges. So in that sense, I don't really see much of a policy difference. There is a lawsuit that's out there that suggests that the federal government can't funnel subsidized insurance through exchanges. But I think my view is that lawsuit probably has a low probability of success.
You were dissing the quality of Medicaid. It's certainly better than nothing if you're 66 years old and uninsured, right?
Well, I'm not convinced of that myself, but I think that either way, I think the most important thing is if we put those seniors on the exchanges, then we avoid the problem altogether of putting them on Medicaid. So whatever you think Medicaid is doing for people, my view is that Medicaid is a terrible program that limits access to doctors and limits access to care. You want people to get the kind of care where they can actually get a doctor's appointment, and if they need medications or they need a screening, they can get it. Medicaid rarely does that well, and the exchanges and Medicare do a much better job of providing people with better access, or at least with the exchanges, what we see in Massachusetts and what we hope to see with the ACA exchanges.
Cindy in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. I was just going to raise the issue that I just heard, that minorities don't have a substantially longer lifespan than others. But your guests seem to say that those people would be shifted, hopefully, to the insurance
exchanges.
Model. I guess my question then would be, are we not shifting the savings we would have from Medicare if we up the eligibility age now to Obamacare or now to Medicaid? And are we saving anything other than disrupting people's lives?
Yeah, and I think go ahead, Alex. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we are saving because the upper half of seniors from an income standpoint would not get subsidized health insurance under the exchanges. It's the bottom half that would. So basically what we're doing is if we raise the retirement age, then lower-income and middle-income seniors would be protected, but upper-income seniors would be required or expected to buy insurance on their own or stay employed. If they stay employed and get insurance for their job, that's fine too. But that would be the responsibility of them rather than of the government, and that's kind of how it should work, really. We should be focusing what limited revenue and tax revenue we have on the people who need it the most.
But Cindy's point is echoed by a number of other people who are calling in and waiting on hold, and I'm not going to put every one of them on the air, but there's a real pushback against this with the argument that not everybody's life expectancy is going up. If you're especially a minority male, your life expectancy really hasn't gone up that much in recent years in this country, and so to just kind of write everybody off into the same group as Americans' life expectancies are going up doesn't really answer the question. What do you say to that?
I say that very simply. Again, those people would continue to have government-sponsored insurance through the Obamacare exchanges. So those people are not people we're leaving behind. And that's exactly why raising the retirement age is something that I think it can appeal to both sides. Before you had the ACA exchanges, if you raise the retirement age, then this problem of minorities having a lower life expectancy would be an issue, and you'd really be worried about disparities in that regard. But when you have the exchanges covering the bottom half of the country in terms of income, which would encompass a lot of these members of ethnic minorities people are concerned about, then it's not a concern unless the exchanges are a failure, right? But if the exchanges work as we were promised by all the people who supported this law, because the exchanges are meant to cover 25 million people as it is,
right.
if Obamacare is good enough for low-income Americans under 65, why would it be so horrible for seniors who happen to be 65 to 66, right? That doesn't make a lot of sense. Either Obamacare is a great law for people who are 18 to 65 and will be eligible for the exchanges, and therefore also for people who are 65 to 67 or not.
By the way, another financial argument against the idea is that it takes the youngest, healthiest people out of Medicare, making Medicare itself more expensive per American who's covered, because they'd be 68 plus, and that would mean higher premiums for seniors, which seems to make actuarial sense. Do you disagree with it?
I disagree on in this way. Number one, the premiums that are set for Medicare are completely artificial. So you're not actually getting a Medicare premium that reflects the actual cost of care in that program. You're getting heavily subsidized care. So there's really no actual market-driven premium that reflects the cost of the actuarial cost of those patients. That's number one. Number two, in the ACA exchanges, that's, you know, it would be an incremental because you have community rating and everyone's forced to charge roughly the same price. But, you know, you should change that. You should actually community rating in the ACA exchanges should be reformed. That's point number two. And point number three, the real issue here is not the per member cost or per beneficiary cost. It's the overall liability to the federal government. Because what we're really talking about here is how do we reduce the footprint of the federal government in healthcare so that in terms of spending, so that we can devote more resources to the people who need them the most. And again, this is the best way to do it. What we're really trying to say here is we're going to continue to dedicate taxpayer dollars to protecting poor people and lower income people, but we're going to tell wealthy seniors, look, you know, you have to be more responsible for your own care. And that seems a pretty reasonable solution.
We're just about out of time, but as a critic of Obamacare, do you see any other ways that Republicans could change it as part of the fiscal cliff negotiations?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece for my Forbes column entitled Opposing Obamacare is Not Enough Toward a New Conservative Healthcare Agenda, and outlines four steps that conservatives, I think, should use to apply some of the more market-oriented aspects of the Affordable Care Act and spread that through the system, particularly in Medicare and Medicaid, where they could save the federal government a lot of money. I think Republicans are still sort of getting over the fact that, well, we lost the election, so it's here to stay, and I think a lot of people in the conservative base want to continue to fight, oppose Obamacare. And my argument is, look, it's here to stay, and we need to work with it and make the system as dedicated to choice and competition as we can, given the fact that the ACA is now part of the fabric of the healthcare system.
Ovik Roy, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and he writes the Apothecary blog on healthcare policy issues for Forbes. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, WNYC radio rookie, Bree Person, on being a kid with sickle cell anemia. We'll play some of her produced piece and talk to her and an expert MD. Stay with us.